I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise, and my guest today is Julie Schiffman. Julie is the founder of Act 3, and our paths crossed when you were an attorney. But you've left law, and you've now created this amazing organization called Act 3. Maybe you can share what that's all about.
About 10 years ago, when I was practicing law, and I had a very successful career, but I just knew that there was something else out there for me, and I didn't know what it was. I left law and really jumped around trying all kinds of different things because there really was no one to help me figure out how to take my skills and my talents that I had learned over all the years and apply them in some new way. Eventually, in talking to a lot of my friends who were going through a lot of the same things, and in fact, many of them had been stay-at-home women. They had had interesting careers early on, but had gotten married, had kids, and had been home for 10, 15, 20 years. And they were also wondering, what were they going to do next in life? And just like many good business ideas, that's how this one started. And I thought, well, there might be a market here. So I did quite a bit of research and found out, in fact, it's a huge demographic. The baby boomers are empty nesting. And this is the first generation in history where women had careers, were highly educated, and then chose to stay home, even if they stayed working, are hitting that place in life where they know they have 30 good more years to go.
Or more.
Or hopefully more. And think, well, maybe this isn't the only thing I want to do. What might come next?
You know, it's so fascinating because I hear this all the time. And I have other friends at the same place. And it's almost a burning in your gut. It's like, okay, what's next? And for those women who really don't know what to do, there is no place. It's not intuitive. So what you've done, it sounds like, is you've created Act 3 and these forums, these amazing forums to really help women understand and sort through their mind and their processes and their thoughts as to what is next for them.
That's exactly right, Crystal. What I did was figure out what would have helped me. We knew that individual coaching, workshops, seminars, all of those kinds of things can help women both figure out what they want to do next in life, but then just as importantly is help them to get through the process to actually doing it. I like to say that imagination without the doing is just great daydreaming, and you really need both of those pieces.
Well, and speaking of imagination, you are having an event coming up on April the 18th called Imagine, Then Do It.
That's right. When I wanted to do a very large women's inspirational event, most of the work that we do at Act 3 is very nuts and bolts. It's resumes, it's networking, it's figuring out what careers you might want or how to get more involved in the community. But again, much more of a nuts and bolts. And I wanted to do something inspirational. So we came up with the concept of what we called Imagine, Then Do It, because it takes both of those pieces. And what I do is invite really amazing women to come to Cincinnati and share their message of how they've imagined doing something different next in life.
And this upcoming event is going to be on April 18th. It's at the Mayerson Academy.
Mayerson JCC.
And you do have some really great speakers. Quickly, before we run out of time, maybe you can share, the keynote speaker is Fawn Germer.
Yes, Fawn is an incredibly well-known speaker around the country. She's an award-winning investigative reporter. She was a four-time Pulitzer nominee. She's been on Oprah. Oprah held up her book and said, you know, this is something you've got to read. And so I'm very excited to be bringing Fawn to town.
And if people are interested, how can they contact you?
So you can register at imaginethendoit.com. Or you can go to our Act 3 website, and it's acttheree.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Julie Schiffman. Julie is the founder and CEO of Act 3. And Julie, you have an amazing event coming up here shortly on April the 18th. It's called Imagine, Then Do It. And this is a morning that's going to go from 8:30 till noon. It's at the Mayerson
JCC.
And it's over on Ridge Road. You'll have what? How many people do you anticipate?
Well, we will have a capacity of 342, and we will hit that. So it definitely takes advanced registration.
I have heard from others who have attended this event. It looks like these women are having so much fun.
It really is. It's a great opportunity to come together with lots of your friends and associates and come and network and learn from amazing women speakers that I bring in. But it's really just all about having fun with all other women.
What do you hope that participants walk away with? What is the takeaway?
Well, my goal in anything that I do, whether it's a seminar or workshop, which are small for Act 3 clients, or these large events that we do, is that the women walk away where they have committed to do at least one step that'll take them to reaching their goals. At our last Imagine event, which was in October of 2010, I asked every woman to fill out a card while she was sitting there and name something that she was going to do, one step that she was going to do. And then I mailed those to the women 90 days later so they could see whether they ever accomplished their goals. And we will be doing that again at Imagine in April 18th. Well, I did hear from one of the women who said that she was so excited when she got her card because not only she had achieved the one goal that she had set out on the card, but also had actually gone forward and registered to go back to school.
Why is it, do you think, that sometimes people have a desire, they have a passion, they have an idea, but are they afraid to execute it? Does it just take being held accountable to actually move forward?
I think it's two things. One is recognizing what the person is fearful of. And we all have innate fears. For some people, it's fear of embarrassment. For others, it's fear of failure. But if you can recognize it, then you can address it. And then your point about accountability is really, really good. It's so helpful to be accountable to somebody. And that's where coaches can come in and help. A coach can be your accountability partner.
So a lot of these women who you work with, in addition to the event that you have, you also are a coach to help women get from where they are today to maybe where they want to be in the future.
That's correct. What Act 3 does is our workshops and seminars, but we also do individual coaching, and we have career coaches, we have business coaches, and I personally coach women who want to be more strategic and involved in the community.
You also are an author.
That's right. I just finished a book, which everybody that comes to Imagine will get a free copy of my book called Act 3. It will be released nationally in September to bookstores and on Amazon.
And again, the event is called Imagine, Then Do It. It's going to be held on April 18th at the Mayerson JCC. And if people would like information,
ImagineThenDoIt.com. And you can also find information on our Act 3 website.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Kevin Hughes. Kevin is the executive managing director of Jones Lang LaSalle, which is a global powerhouse in real estate. But Kevin, in 2009, you left the day-to-day world of this
capitalism
and you went to work in Over the Rhine at a not-for-profit organization that you led,
right,
called Cornerstone. It really was helping people become more self-sufficient. Less than a year ago, you and I sat on a panel that the United Way presented along with a couple other folks, and we were talking about some solutions. How can we as a community help lift people out of poverty? And some of the work you did at Cornerstone was just that.
The whole program at Cornerstone is based on the reality that if you don't have assets, you'll never get ahead in life. Stated earlier, the average income of our residents is less than $20,000 a family. So everyone's working, trying to make ends meet, but you can imagine how challenging it is to do that. At $20,000, you can pay your rent, put food on the table, mm-hmm, send your kid to public schools. But if you have a medical emergency, your car breaks down, I mean, you're screwed.
And well, what makes Cornerstone unique? I mean, what drew you to that?
Cornerstone has a program called Renter Equity, or a system, I should say, in which the residents of the apartment community take ownership of the community. They write the rules. Everyone has jobs to do in the community. You must attend, you know, meetings. You have to pay your rent on time. And if you do those things, if you do those three things every month, you earn credits in an investment account in your name. So you can earn up to $10,000 over 10 years. So it's an asset building vehicle. Mm-hmm. So without question, it gives you the financial foundation that most of these people didn't think was possible. The part that's more amazing to me, having been down there for a couple years, though, is the financial footing is critical. And that's, again, the essence of the program. But the other elements of accountability and pride, mm-hmm, of their homes. You know, I used to think that what we were doing is helping people save money so they go buy a house. The residents would now look at me like I have two heads when I talk about that. Why would we ever leave this wonderful community? The glues of a community are the neighbor-to-neighbor relationship, which unfortunately have been eroded, certainly in the urban core, after many years. Today, together, they're solving problems. They're making the streets safer.
If you had a lesson to share, if you had something that you wanted the rest of the community to understand, how others can get engaged in similar processes, what would be your one big aha that you would like to share?
Well, that everybody wants to accomplish something for themselves, and not everybody is playing on a level playing field. So again, a program like Renter Equity, I think, does give people that hand up that they might need to start building some assets and start regaining pride, hope.
Well, and as you know, we do an event every year called Accounting for Kids, where we show children how if they save money, work, they can have an economically empowered life. We teach them that at a very young age and have tutors and mentors that get involved. And again, it's the same concept. If you can show a child how they can do it for themselves, how they can break that cycle of poverty, it's a powerful thing. And as a region, purely from a business standpoint, forget about the fact it's the right thing to do for another human being. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of business reasons to do that.
Absolutely. Look, when I went to work down there every day, I got out of there when it got dark, as did our staff. Our residents stay. They're the ones who call the cops on the bad guys. They're the ones making it a safer community. And there's an economic benefit, without a doubt, to having a safer urban core, safer downtown, and people with jobs and ambition and pride and hope.
If folks would like more information about Cornerstone or how to reach you.
We have a website, Cornerstone Corporation for Shared Equity, or anyone can call me or Google me, Kevin Hughes. My phone number is 513-236-5000.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Greg Hartman. Greg is the president of the Hamilton County Commission. And Greg, I'm very honored to serve on your Hamilton County Coalition to Stop Fraud, Scams, and Abuse that you actually created, what, about 2 years ago?
Yeah, January of 2011.
And I guess the point of that is to really minimize the opportunity for someone to commit a fraud against them or actually a scam on them, correct?
Yeah, it's an educational campaign to try to prevent as many people as we can from falling prey to the criminals that are out there that are taking advantage of our citizens through fraud scams. And the criminal mind is smart. And when people hear about this, they think, oh, that could never happen to me. Well, we've seen a real explosion of scams in the recent downturn in the economy. So we've tried to educate citizens proactively.
But you've been very active, and the coalition's been very active. You recently had a meeting educating people about tax fraud, correct?
The main message there is to make sure if somebody offers to do your taxes for you that it's a reputable individual. We've got tax scams that are occurring primarily to people that are below certain wages, promising large refunds, and they end up being scams. That will follow them, that victim, for the rest of their life many times.
They use their Social Security numbers in order to fraudulently get a large refund, but it doesn't go to that person. It goes to the fraud perpetrator.
There is reputable help and free help for people that earn under $49,000 a year through the United Way, and I would encourage listeners, if they fall into that category, to seek that help.
You recently also had your State of the County address. Maybe you can talk about some of the opportunities that you see here for our county and some of the challenges.
Well, economic development is really a focus in our next two-year cycle. There is a role for government and economic development. In an urban county like ours, we need to form public-private partnerships to rehab many of the properties that we've got, like the old con site. We needed to use Ohio funds to remediate that property so we can develop on it. We don't have green space to build on where businesses can expand, and there is a role for government in that. So we've increased funding in a time when we've cut overall spending by almost 35% in the last 5 years with almost 1,500 less employees. But we believe that much, all three of us do, that economic development is that important, that we've increased funding for economic development by 40% and doing smart things like forming a land bank to deal with the foreclosure crisis. That's using tools that we've got in government to clear title and get those properties back into the hands of private business owners. We're also in partnerships with the City of Cincinnati and our new Port Authority. We've got a new CEO there, and I think that's really going to make a difference in the future.
And what's the benefit of that Port Authority in terms of how you're, I guess, have changed the leadership there? What are you trying to accomplish?
Using smart private sector development people to invest our dollars. So we're investing alongside of the City of Cincinnati, both in operations dollars and forming a bond fund to do big picture projects and big projects, not spreading a few dollars all around the county, but doing big projects where we're creating jobs. And we're very excited about that. Laura Brunner is our new director of that Port Authority, and she's a big reason we've increased our commitment. So it's focused commitment to investing in our community along with the City of Cincinnati. A number of years ago, it wouldn't have even been a possibility with the city and the county doing anything together, never mind focusing on economic development like this. And we really think it's going to be a game changer.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Commissioner Greg Hartman. Greg is the president of the Hamilton County Commission. And Greg, I know it's been a pretty interesting couple of years that you've served. What's the biggest challenge you see? Is it getting the budget balanced?
I think the biggest challenge has been being able to still invest in our future while making the cuts that we've had to make. Some people might have heard before that you can't cut your way to prosperity. It is true. So we've made the cuts that we've had to have made in budgets. You know, we haven't had a choice but to do that, and we've lived within our means. Our budget just 4 years ago was $280 million before I got here, and next year we're looking at a budget of about $190 million. That's a big number, close to 35% reduction in our workforce. We've had to streamline things and to still deliver what we're required to do by the state. But, you know, our budget still 70% of it is public safety. So we've really focused on public safety, made investments in economic development for future growth. A lot of other areas and a lot of other things that we used to do, we don't do anymore. Government does a very good job of spending every dime that it takes in. Just take a look at Washington, and they do a good job of spending money that they don't even take in, that they borrow for the future, because forcing government into a place where they've got to make cuts is a good thing. It's been a challenge to live through these times, but it's what every person that really pays for our government does. I mean, you live within your means, you balance your checkbook, and you don't spend money you don't have.
Do you see these financial, I won't call it a crisis, but the tightening of the revenues, do you see that diminishing? Is the economy starting to bring revenues back in terms of at least sales tax?
I think that in Hamilton County, we've seen in 2010, we hit a height of unemployment. We've seen some recovery since then. We were in the 9% range in 2010. We're now in the sevens, in the mid sevens in unemployment. That's positive, but we're not going to see revenue ever come back, nor should we. I think that this has been a permanent kind of realignment of our economy and of the size of government as well. So it should certainly not be the mission to get back to where we used to be. We're more efficient now. We need to stay right-sized. And I think around $190 million general fund budget of the county is about what it should be. And it's been a challenge to get there, though, and there's still some more to do next year with about $10 million more in cuts next year.
In addition to the fraud coalition and the economic development efforts, you've also started a program that helps our children, foster children, in the community in terms of providing mentors and things like that. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit and why that's so important to our region.
I noticed when I became a commissioner a couple of years ago some numbers that I really couldn't believe, and those numbers occurred in the population of people that live in our county that age out of the foster care system. Large percentages of that population were going to prison. Almost 25% of that population, their kids, through no fault of their own, whose parents had either run off or gotten into trouble, became, you know, our responsibility as foster kids. Once they age out, become 18, they were just being kind of left to their own devices. And having met some of these kids, they're worried on a day-to-day basis about surviving. So we started the Higher Education Mentoring Initiative, which paired mentors from our community with some of these kids. And it's been a great success. It involves the spirit of mentoring and donating your time one child at a time. But since we started this program, 100% of the kids that have been in it have graduated from high school. Over 80% are seeking higher education degrees and programs. We've even got a kid that's an applicant to Harvard this year. It's really been neat to be part of. And again, you know, in tough economic times, you got to form partnerships and do things that haven't been done before, and this is one of those.
Folks would like more information on that program, they can actually call 513-556-4368. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is a vice president, principal, and portfolio manager with Ball & Gaynor. This past January, the first month of 2012, was a good month from most perspectives, I think people would say. And there is a prediction, right, or a historical trend that if January of a year ends well, so goes the rest of the year?
That's true. Of course, last January was a fine January, too. Last year was a bit of a white-knuckle ride in that the market took off well early in the year, hit its highs in April, and then swooned during the summer. And October ended up being one of the best months ever as it regrouped and came back.
I can remember last August, September, people were panicking. Markets were dropping dramatically, rising. It was just amazing, the swings.
Well, yeah, September was brutal, a particularly bad month. In October, the snapback really bailed the market out. And the last quarter, the market was up 11%. So the most interesting point, though, is you really didn't make any money last year except from the dividends of the stocks you owned. The net return for the S&P 500 was 2.11, and that was essentially the dividend return. If you have a spending mandate with your money, say you're an endowment, a foundation, or a wealthy individual trying to live on your nest egg when you're retired, it's a wonderful thing to have that income coming in because you know you're not invading your principal.
Dividends, cash dividends are the real thing. You know, we say that it's always great to see a company that has a good profit on their income statement, on their bottom line, but the reality of that is that's not cash. Profit is not the same thing as cash. When a company pays dividends, that's really cash going out their door to their shareholders.
Dividends are a wonderful thing to see because it's an acid test. A company can't fake dividends or can't fake the increase in their dividend rate, where maybe they can manipulate their earnings. The rate at which a company increases their dividend is an indicator we follow very closely because it's sort of an early warning. If the great growth rate is slowing, we'll probably see it there first.
Well, and from a tax viewpoint, speaking as a CPA, dividends are very attractive because, for the most part, they're taxed at a 15% tax rate, at least this year.
At least for now.
Well, yes, and we like it because a company can't declare a dividend and a growing dividend on a regular basis unless their underlying business is pretty dependable, pretty stable. So they don't really get in that game unless they have the ability to deliver. And it's a signal to the financial community what the dividend increase is. So they're very careful about protecting that increase if they can do it.
What are some companies that you are aware of that pay dividends?
Probably one of the most exciting names to be in last year was McDonald's. Everyone's familiar with the franchise, but their ability to grow their dividends in a difficult year really helped investors out. Their yield is close to 3%, and that keeps going up every year. They're adding franchises in China, maybe 100 a year. They're growing very quickly there and establishing a beachhead, and they should be able to continue to grow for many, many years. And in the emerging markets, their footprint really is their future.
If folks would like more information about Ballingane or about some of the discussion topics, what's your website? How can they reach you?
Oh, our website is www.ballgainer.com. 287-6100.
And that's 513-287-6100.
Yes.
And we're going to continue our conversation with Ellie Moffitt from Ballingainer tomorrow. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is a vice president and principal with Ballingainer and also a senior portfolio manager. We talked about dividend-paying stocks and companies that can pay and increase their dividends. What's the advantage of dividend-paying stocks versus bonds that pay interest?
Well, right now, it's a clear-cut advantage in terms of income. If you're trying to live off the income from your investments, 10-year treasuries, 10 years, are yielding less than 2%. If you assume inflation is 3%, that's probably a losing bet.
It's not going to get you very far, is it?
So it makes it a little easier to take that leap of faith and buy some solid blue-chip companies with yields. Interestingly, IBM just came out today with a bond that yields 55 basis points for 3 years. So if you believe in IBM and you believe it'll be here in 3 years, maybe you'd be happier in the stock and pick up a much larger yield there, and hopefully the stock will make some progress.
Most people just don't understand a lot of these issues. I think they've been so frightened by the swings, the up and down swings, that a lot of time people just rush to what they, in their mind, have always thought to be the safest bet, the most risk-free investment style. But that's not a good thing, is it?
No, you make a very good point, Crystal. The market is a herd, and herds are driven by fear and greed. And the fear factor has driven people into treasury bonds. We think people that are in long-term bond funds are going to be very disappointed because at some point, the Fed is going to let rates ease up, and they're going to be disappointed. They think they're safe hiding in bond funds or in long-term bonds, but the value of those bonds are going to go down.
You know, I always tell people this is not a test run. You have to go out and find outside advice, people that do this all day, so that they can help you make a good decision so you can reach your long-term goals.
Well, we often use the analogy, it's sort of like you probably think you could coach an NFL football team. A lot of people do. But if you don't have that group of advisors up at the top of the stadium and you don't have a dozen guys behind you to help out, you really may be at a huge disadvantage with your lifetime savings up against the professionals of the world.
And we're almost out of time, but what else would you like people to know about the benefits of investing in stocks that yield dividends?
Well, historically, the high-quality dividend payers that we buy for our clients have given our clients a much smoother ride. That is, they're less volatile, or they have less risk, defining risk as standard deviation, which, again, is the wildness of the ride. So your portfolio moves much more smoothly through storms, and that's a very gratifying thing when the market's down, to have your portfolio less disrupted.
So the ability to pay the dividends protects the stock somewhat on the downside, making it more attractive in a bad market?
Yes.
It's many times easy to make smart, quote-unquote, investments when the market's going up, but it's about how do you protect your downside that really makes a huge difference overall.
That's exactly right. The only time they really question their asset allocation is during the storm. And if you can keep people comfortable when everything's going wrong, then it's smooth sailing the rest of the time. So it's just a question of calibrating where's the right place to be. And that's much easier to do when you have these high-quality dividend-paying names.
And if people would like more information about you, Ellie, what's your website?
www.bahl-gaynor.com.
Your telephone number is
513-287-6100.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Kevin Finn. Kevin is the executive director of the nonprofit organization Strategies to End Homelessness. And Kevin, we all have seen people, downtown Cincinnati specifically, or in certain areas of our region that are homeless. You work with homeless people all the time. Who is, I guess I should say, the average homeless person?
The average homeless person in our community would be a single adult. More homeless people are male than female, so I guess you would say a single adult male. There's also a disproportionate amount of African Americans represented in our homeless community, so an African American male.
And what causes, or is there any one or two specific reasons that cause these people to become homeless?
The reasons why people become homeless are as unique as the number of homeless people. There are all sorts of factors that play into it. I think the most strategic way to address the problem, though, is sort of one thing, and that would be prevention.
That's what your organization focuses on, correct?
Currently, yes. Up until 2.5 years ago, there weren't really any resources available for prevention. So it's somewhat new, which is sort of sad to say.
But highly successful.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, we partner with organizations that provide 3 months of case management to households at the same time as we provide them with up to $2,500 in financial assistance to stabilize their housing, and we have a 97% success rate in doing that. Now, it is very easy to document that it costs a whole lot more than $2,500 to get people back into housing after they have already become homeless, so really prevention is the most cost-effective way to come at the issue, regardless of what the reason is that the person was at risk.
Well, you know, Tom and I are CPAs, right? And I know you don't have to be a CPA to figure that out. $2,500 if...
Right, if a social worker can figure that out.
So I guess having said that, then as a society, what should be done from your point of view to help continue this prevention? And a lot of these folks we had talked earlier really are homeless because they just don't make enough money. They don't have the benefits. They are, quote unquote, the working poor.
Well, what I would personally like to see would just be that existing funding be repurposed toward prevention. So we oversee about $13 million a year in federal funding to serve the homeless. Only $1 million of that is eligible to be used for prevention. The other $12 million can only be spent on people who are already homeless. If those ratios of dollars could be changed around and we could do more prevention, then I think we could really make a dent in the issue.
It's sort of like the healthcare system for the same population. I mean, all the money gets spent at the emergency room instead of on the prevention
side. If it was spent on prevention, we'd see a lot fewer people in the emergency room. And really, the emergency shelter in the street, that's the emergency room of homelessness.
And it just seems to me that it's such common sense. If you're spending $1 million a year on prevention, but $12 or $13 million a year to support people that have already been homeless, what am I missing here? Why is this such a difficult conversation to make people understand?
The largest sources of funding for homeless services is really very little local money that goes into funding. It's primarily federal dollars, and those are all strings that are attached to those dollars by the federal government. So that is really where the change would have to happen in order to repurpose those dollars.
Well, and I suspect it's a lot easier to get charitable organizations involved with someone who's already homeless It's not as an acute.
Well, people who are already homeless, they're right there. You can see them.
Right.
People who are at risk of becoming homeless are more difficult to find. If we had the resources to serve them, I'm sure we could also have an easier time finding them.
So if someone listening would like to get your services, they are concerned that they may end up losing their home or becoming homeless, how can they find you?
The easiest way is to call the Central Access Point, or CAP line, as it's called. That number is 513-381-SAFE.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ryan Reibold. Ryan is the president of Infintech. And Ryan, your company is located here in Cincinnati, but you're launching a new program that's going to be all over the country.
That's correct. Infintech, we specialize in credit card processing. So we set up a business or provide a service to a business that has a need to accept credit cards as a form of payment. We are excited to announce a new partnership with The Cure Starts Now. It's called Secure Payments, a little play off of words there. And the whole purpose is for us to use what we do well, and that's credit card processing, to benefit this nonprofit whose goal is to find the ultimate home run cure for cancer.
Well, and it's kind of a unique partnership, it seems to me, because you're giving the charity a substantial portion of your revenues under this new arrangement, aren't you?
That's correct. And, you know, I was introduced to The Cure Starts Now about a year ago, and with my involvement with the Hyde Park Blast, we allocate a large portion of our proceeds to The Cure Starts Now. And I was introduced to Brooke and Keith Deserick, who are the founders of The Cure Starts Now. They're business people, and they take their business minds and apply it to a worthy cause in creating The Cure Starts Now. And they've forged other relationships with, like, Gold Star and with Graders, the Cones for a Cure, where they get a portion of all of the purchases of Elena's Blueberry Pie. It's a flavor that they've invented. And so we partnered with The Cure Starts Now to say, listen, any business that wants to support The Cure Starts Now can process their payments through Infintech. We'll keep their rates identical to what they are today, or potentially even lower them, and then we'll allocate 25%. A quarter of our revenue will go on an ongoing basis to The Cure Starts Now.
If you've not had an instance of cancer in your own family, you certainly know someone that's been touched by cancer. It's something everybody can relate, and it's such a helpless feeling. But yet, if you are doing business with a company, or if you're contributing in some way that really can make an impact.
Well, yeah, it's not only a way for us to, I guess, leverage what we excel in and what our expertise is to benefit someone else, but it's also a challenge to other businesses to figure out ways that they can leverage their assets to the benefit of it. Brooke and Keith founded The Cure Starts Now after their daughter, Elena, had been diagnosed with a rare form of brain cancer. And so they created this nonprofit. It's 100% of the proceeds. They've raised, by the end of this year, they'll raise $1 million for cancer research. 100% of what they raise goes to fund early stage research projects.
So is this a program that any business can take part in your Secure Payments program?
Yeah, if anyone is interested, they can reach out to us or visit our website, which is infintechllc.com.
I'm a big believer in taking your own talents and resources or your businesses and figuring out how you can use those to help others in the community and the world, really.
Absolutely. If any business can just figure out how to leverage their own assets and their own skills to the benefit of a nonprofit, it's a more meaningful relationship for everyone involved.
And again, if folks want more information about Infintech or the Secure Payments program, how can they reach you?
They can reach us at our office. It's area code 513-761-1448. They can be directed to someone who can get them more information. And also through the Hyde Park Blast or through The Cure Starts Now, which is thecurestartsnow.org.
Ryan Reibold, president with Infintech. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Ryan Reibold, who's the president of Infintech. And Ryan, you've got a whole host of activities you've been involved in over the years, mainly in the not-for-profit arena as a volunteer. You started Give Back Cincinnati. You're one of the founders, I think, of the Hyde Park Blast. Now you're involved with The Cure Starts Now. What has led you to do all this nonprofit work?
From the beginning, I guess my parents instilled it in us just to have that balance of, you know, work and play and community service. And when we started Give Back Cincinnati, it was a way, selfishly, to, I guess, create more of a positive environment or a positive experience for young professionals in Cincinnati. And I think that Give Back taught me how to lead a business. You know, leading a nonprofit where people don't have to show up every single day really, I think, provides a good foundation for running a for-profit business. I guess consensus-based leadership is what I like to refer to it as. At the core, you know, the more that we can be successful, the more we can, you know, help support those organizations we're passionate about.
And it's worked out well for you, right? I mean, even from a business standpoint, through the recession, you've seen significant growth.
Yeah, we've grown over, you know, 100% since 2008. We created a product out of the gates called Pledge Connect that is, its intention was to allow nonprofits to cast that giving net broader in a virtual space. That's taken off, you know, in the most unexpected area. We have hundreds and hundreds of churches that use Pledge Connect now to facilitate electronic offertory.
And you just recently launched a brand new program called Secure Payments. It's a partnership with The Cure Starts Now Cancer Research. Why did you get involved with that?
If you've ever met Brooke and Keith Deserich, you would know why. You know, their passion for finding the home run cure for cancer is contagious. And they're business people running a nonprofit organization.
And these are folks who lost their little girl to cancer at the age of six.
They lost their daughter, Elena, at the age of six to a rare form of brain cancer. When you, I guess, blend or bridge two organizations, you know, business people running a nonprofit, and I guess InfanTech nonprofit people running a for-profit, it's just a perfect marriage. And the way that we can allocate a portion of our revenue on an ongoing basis to support them versus just writing a check is so much more meaningful.
And so many people these days really want to work with organizations that are doing good things in the community, all things being equal. Sounds like it's a win-win. You're actually partnering with this not-for-profit. It's like an annuity for them.
Absolutely. It's an annuity, and everyone wins involved. The business can reduce their fees. The InfanTech, we increase business. And the nonprofit, The Cure Starts Now, increases their ongoing revenue through an annuity.
And the way this works is the business who signs up through the Secure Payments, you will give, InfanTech actually contributes 25% of the revenue from that business to the nonprofit.
You're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head, and it just builds with every business that signs up. The amount that we can support The Cure Starts Now in finding that home run cure for brain cancer.
And if people want information about the program or about InfanTech,
they can contact our office or visit our website, InfanTech, InfanTechLLC.com.
Ryan, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.